tonight on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez. We have our political roundtable of Ken Jagabowski, Eric Elk, and Dave Lundy. And now, live from Los Angeles, California, but broadcasting here in the WGN radio studios in Chicago, Illinois, the one and only Patty Vasquez.
Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us Pretty Late. I am your host, Patty Vasquez. It's Friday night, and, you know, it's a great time to kind of unwind together. It is our wine and wine down night. I feel like we should, you know, keep it light tonight, but there's so much that's happened all week. I haven't had a chance to hang out with you and talk about all the news of the week. And joining us in studio, we have Eric Elk of Fulcrum, Illinois. We have Dave Lundy of Aileron Communications, Ken Jagabowski of Sirius. And I want to touch base with you guys, see how you guys are all doing. I didn't hang out with you guys much except for Eric last Friday. How's everyone doing?
We miss you, Patty.
I miss you too, Dave, but you can't miss me that much with a Cubs win.
No. The Cubs win makes it all okay.
It makes it all okay. How's Ken doing? Ken, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Now, where are you exactly?
Exactly?
Yes.
You know what's funny? I actually have enough cord, if I wanted to take my Comrex, which is the equipment with which we broadcast, to go out to the beach. I'm at an Airbnb in Playa del Rey. If I get a chance, I'll bring the microphone over to the screen door. But I am about a football field away from the edge of where the water hits the sand.
I think there's a full moon in L.A. tonight. I was watching the Dodger game, and they showed a shot of a beautiful full moon.
I have sat out on my balcony out on the little deck that we have. I've been out here since last Wednesday, and I've had the pleasure of being able to stay near the ocean pretty much the entire time. Friends of mine who live in Hermosa Beach let me stay at their place, and they have a rooftop a block away from the ocean so I can watch the sunset. But here, yes, I have sat outside and just watched the sun sink into the ocean. For people who are, I guess, flat earthers still, I'm not sure what they think happens when that occurs, if they think the sun literally sinks into the ocean. But it's been beautiful. And, yes, it has been a full moon for the last several nights. And it's like a big spotlight on the sand, Ken. It is remarkable. It's a really magnificent view. So there's no way to really take a good picture of the moon. I don't know if you've ever tried to do that unless you have a professional camera of some type.
With my phone,
the iPhone doesn't really work well for that purpose.
No.
It doesn't do it justice at all. Mm-mm. So it's been a weird thing to be here and be separated from. I mean, when things are so topsy turvy in the world and scary and frustrating and bewildering, and there's a lot of news. Of course, I just heard Rob Martier talking about Governor Rauner and his comments in regards to what he thinks should happen going forward as far as gun ownership in the country. And I mentioned this on Monday when we were on the air that we really have got to come to a point where people who are responsible gun owners can hear people who want to discuss what that means. And hear them say, we are worried about our safety, and people who are worried about gun ownership, that they hear gun owners, you know, worried about their liberties being infringed. So if we can't listen to each other, then nothing else happens. I don't think we move forward. Do you guys?
You know, I think it's a real challenge because at this point, the folks who are anti-gun control, and I'm not going to call them pro-gun, I'm going to call them anti-gun control, are so rabidly anti-gun control. They see phantom menaces coming in every direction. So remember, for 8 years, Barack Obama was going to take their guns, was going to come and collect their guns. And they call anybody who wants any sort of gun regulation to be gun grabbers. But that's not really fair. I mean, I have no I support the right to bear arms. It's the Second Amendment. It's fine. But we used to have reasonable restrictions in this country for 200 plus years. But in the last 25, the other side has just gone absolutely bonkers. There was a time in the Clinton administration years when, you know, cop killer bullets were bad and assault weapons were banned, and there was enough of a bipartisan majority to do that, and you had limitations on the size of clips and all those what would seem to be reasonable regulations, and all of that is now considered crazy.
It is. You're right now. You sound crazy to me, Dave. I'm just telling you.
Well, you know,
because it's a day ending in a Y, Patty.
The sobering thought is that I heard this week that there are 5 million assault weapons in the United States.
Wow.
And the is it called
only 5 million?
5 million. Is it called,
because there's over 350 million guns?
Correct. Is it called the bump stock?
It's something like that. Yeah.
Bump stocks have sold out.
Yeah.
Across the country since
the
events of last Sunday, because people have just assumed they're going to be banned and they wanted to buy them.
Well, immediately after the massacre, the next day, gun stocks, and I don't mean bump stocks, but the stocks of gun manufacturers, they all went up. Because
right,
what happens every single time,
yeah.
Exactly, every yep. single time. And I've got... Sorry, go ahead,
Pat. We have to take a break here. We're going to bring Todd Belcourt into the conversation, and he has a film festival coming up, and it's about social change, and it is about these conversations that we're having, whether it's about violence or about the social injustices in communities, economic, racial. Let's talk to Todd about his event and bring him into our conversation in regards to so many things going on, including the news, whether it's Tillerson or the soda tax or so many other things to tackle. Again, you are listening pretty late. It's Friday night. I know that these are heavy topics. We will we'll try to keep it light, mix things up a little bit. And thank you so much for hanging out. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, broadcasting live from our Allstate Showcase Studios West. We have back in studio in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue, we have Ken Jacobowski of Sirius Enterprises and Dave Lundy from Aileron Communications. And on the line with us, we have Todd Belcourt, the executive director of Social Change. Todd, what's going on with your phone over there?
That's not me beeping, I promise, but that sounds very promising.
You are out and about. We actually are in Los Angeles together. Eric and Dave, I promise someday to bring you out to Los Angeles as well. I don't mean to leave you out of the party.
Well, thank you.
Preferably in the wintertime.
Yeah, let's see. We have to ask Todd, we have an amazing place. We're thinking January is a good time to come out here.
I'm in.
I think we have our Allstate Showcase Studio.
It's actually
West.
A little chilly in January, at least for me. January and February, yeah. Yeah, it's
compared to what? Chicago?
Exactly.
No, not compared to Chicago, no.
I mean, knock it off.
Now,
absolutely. It's a picturesque view and great people. You got to come out.
Yeah, you got to come out. Todd and I are hanging out at a Airbnb in Playa del Rey. We've also got Dr. Charles Turk with us, and it is our Allstate. I have my pretty late crew hanging out on the West Coast. Sorry, guys. I promise next time. I mean, I didn't know how it was going to be. They're like, it's like our test run out here. Todd, are you on the street? What's going on where you are?
I'm reporting live from the streets of West Hollywood.
Okay, well, tell everybody to be quiet. What are you doing in Los Angeles? Tell everybody what you have going on here as well as in Chicago coming up.
What I'm doing now is enjoying some significant time with activists and organizers and organizations and LA, making sure that everyone's on the same page for our Change Fest coming up, our Social Change Film Festival, October 21st in West LA. We've got the same things, kind of like the Lollapalooza for activists in Chicago, LA, and New York all throughout October. So October 13th through 15th at Harold Washington Cultural Center, October 21st at West LA College, and of course, October 28th in New York's DCTV. So people are really excited, a lot of buzz, and I got to travel to make sure we're all excited on the same page and understanding what our roles are and providing action opportunities for people and filmmakers know where to be and, walkthroughs and the like.
Can you give us an example of some of the films that are going to be involved that have been submitted for the Social Change, for the Change Film Festival?
For sure. Well, we've got an opening night full of world premieres. I mean, be the first people in the entire world to see incredible films like Tanya, which is a film where featuring Chicago Fire actor Eamon Walker, and it talks about sex trafficking, foster care system, fatherhood, addiction, all in one film, and it's really a powerful vignette speaking to all the different pushes and pulls that go into what makes someone enter into the sex trafficking industry and how they become kind of a slave to it, but also how difficult it is to help people overcome that and break that cycle, break that slavery. And also some of the difficult pushes and pulls relating to fostering a child and adopting a child. So that's just one film. And we've got films relating to the conflicts, of course, in the Middle East, films relating to water access in India, films relating to education access in Africa, and films relating to violence in Chicago and California. I mean, we've got all the subject matters covered. The point is to have people come to enjoy the fun, the revelry, and the opportunity to be amongst people who want to go beyond the divisiveness that's really pervaded our culture and recognize the common humanity that you recognize through film and build new bonds and build some movements for change.
And when does the, if, as far as the festival in Chicago, when does that, you said that's the 13th through the 15th?
That's right. It's next weekend, October 13th through 15th at the Harold Washington Cultural Center. So right down the street from the Corner Place, for those who aren't familiar. And it's a performing arts theater. It's a Shakespearean theater. It's a 1,000 seat auditorium. And we'd love for people to come. It's going to be an incredible event with award-winning actors, filmmakers, red carpets, conversations, and just opportunities to get involved, to do something about the very injustice that we're talking about. An opportunity for people to get from behind the computers and behind the kind of Facebook activist opportunities to actually get involved in the movements afoot to do something about the issues that we see day to day.
Now, Ken and Dave, back in studio, on Friday, I think we do a field trip. We go to the film festival and then come back to studio. Are you guys in? What do you think? If the Cubs aren't playing, at least. Otherwise, we go on Saturday. We go on the day they're not playing.
Yeah, it sounds like a good time.
Yeah, I have to say, though, I'm excited to see a film like Tanya. I think it's a tremendous subject that needs to be brought more, I think, have more light shined on it. But when I heard the name of the film, Tanya, the first thing, this just goes to show how old I am, the first thing I thought of was Patty Hearst, because that was Patty Hearst's name when she was with the SLA.
Oh, really?
Tanya.
Yep.
There you go.
And it may be the only time prior to tonight that I've ever heard the name Tanya was with Patty Hearst.
Oh, really? Oh, interesting. Well, and Todd also mentioned violence in our major cities across the country. You know, obviously, again, coming back to what we heard during the news in regards to Governor Rauner sort of sidestepping and saying, you know, I'm glad the conversations are being had about gun legislation. Are we really having conversations? It seems like that's all we've done, as Dave mentioned, since the 80s. There hasn't been much movement in regards to that. And the fact that the press secretary in the White House today continues to talk about Chicago. Well, you know, they have the toughest gun laws in the country. Do we? You guys? Do we really? We don't. Those were repealed years ago, years ago.
It's not so much that whether we have the toughest gun laws or we don't have the toughest gun laws. What matters is what Indiana has, and Indiana has some of the weakest gun laws in the country.
Yep.
And if you ask the FBI, and if you ask the Chicago Police Department, they will tell you the problem they have is that they're outgunned because of what's happening in Indiana and to a lesser extent in Wisconsin.
Yeah, 50% of the guns in the city of Chicago have come from Indiana.
I've heard 60% between Indiana and Wisconsin and Iowa is the number that I heard from my friend in the FBI.
Yep, heard that.
So that's a pretty large number, because all three of those states that surround us, have, and as far as the gun laws that have been drawn down, conceal and carry was something that has been removed in Chicago, and gun registration has also been removed in Chicago. So for people who say that Chicago has these strictest gun laws, it is not true. Please stop saying it. And the fact that the press secretary in the White House continues to say that is appalling and untrue. We have to take a quick break here. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, broadcasting live from our Allstate Showcase Studios West in Los Angeles. I am in Playa del Rey, just about 100 yards away from where water hits the sand, and having a wonderful evening. Looking forward to coming back to Chicago and seeing all my favorite people who are in studio. Right now we have Dave Lundy, Eric Elk, and Ken Jakubowski. On the line we have Todd Belcore, who I don't have to wait to see until he gets back from wherever he is tonight, because we're hanging out in Los Angeles with Charles Turk. And Todd, and I know we were going to talk about the soda tax, and we'll take some calls and texts in regards to that. I do think we need a few more moments on the conversations, prayers and thoughts. I think we've sort of worked through all of that. I've been praying and thinking about the safety and the future of our country is one of the things I've been praying and thinking about for the last several days. And Todd, I know you had some thoughts as far as guns go and gun violence. What'd you want to say?
Yeah, it's clear that President Trump has been really focusing most of his administrative goals on trying to undo things that President Obama did previously. I think if he is really interested in doing something about both this issue, but continuing that kind of all holds barred attempt to undo President Obama's work, he should do more about gun trafficking. President Obama didn't do nearly enough about it. And certainly, as you heard your prior guest talking about the proliferation of guns that come from neighboring states, that's something that can be done federally. And that's something that he could take an active role in. And that's something he can actually do to save lives right now. Certainly, mentioning Chicago's violence is an easy talking point. But the more difficult decision is, will you be willing to stand up to people in your own party or people in Congress and say, we need to do something to make sure guns are being registered. We need to do something to make sure bullets are actually chronicled so we know who's responsible for them. We need to do something to make sure that guns aren't flowing so readily across states. I think that's something he could do from his bully pulpit if he so chose. That's something he could do that would help him further distance himself from what Obama did or wasn't able to do. So it's consistent with his attempted legacy of trying to undo everything Obama did, but also it'll make an impact. So I think it's better for him to invest his energy in that than to, you know, just continue to deride Chicago as a laughingstock of cities when really there's things that we can't control and go well beyond our ability to legislate.
And Eric, that's something you and I did. We were just texting moments ago about the framers of the Constitution, our founding fathers, who, when they wrote the Second Amendment, they were muskets. You had to make your own bullets. You know, you had to collect all the ingredients that were necessary over a fire. You had to cast that metal. You had to have pouches of gunpowder. You needed to load that musket. It was a different type of weaponry. But for some reason, we've gotten to the point now where it doesn't matter. It's Second Amendment rights at all costs with no restrictions and the complete and utter sort of frenzy when it comes in these moments. The Democrats are accused of, jumping and wanting to talk about gun legislation. But the people who say that they're jumping are the ones that jump and want to protect that. And no one's listening to anybody. Eric, what are your thoughts on the Second Amendment and where we are now and how we move forward?
Right. Well, I mean, as we were texting, and as you just laid out, I don't think the framers had any concept or idea of, you know, using AK-47s or these massive military war killing machines for everyday use or for everyday ownership or collection. And, you know, that's exactly what these are. I think that there's, you know, why we have to, I was thinking about this, it's easier to probably go purchase an AK-47 than it is to go to Walgreens and get Sudafed.
Wow. Yeah.
No, it's absolutely true.
Yeah. It's true. You have to have an ID
and
you're registered.
That,
right.
You know, we're coming to a point where we've got to start being, you know, we're the only country, one of the only countries in the world that has this type of opportunity to buy these war military grade killing machines. I mean, that's what it is. I've got handguns, I own guns, but it's not an automatic weapon. It's not a military grade killing machine, go out and hunt or something like that with a rifle is one thing, but you've got to reload and it takes time and, you know, you've got to aim and things like that. With these types of automatic weapons, they just start firing away and you're popping off rounds, hundreds of rounds in a minute.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I want to, before I we'll continue this conversation, and I know we'll probably get calls and texts. Todd, I know that you got to run, and I want to thank you so much for joining our conversation again. How do people find out about the festival that you have coming up, the name, locations, and everything?
Absolutely. People can just go to Chicago Social Change. That's our website, chicagosocialchange.org, or at Shy Social Change. That's our Twitter handle. Sorry,
it's a Friday night in Los Angeles.
Yeah, right. At Shy Social Change on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And we'd love to have everyone next weekend at the Harold Washington Cultural Center, the weekend after in L.A., and the weekend after that in New York, the Change Fest.
Well, be safe tonight. Get back and bring a bottle of Bullet, will you? Also,
of course.
I've got ice cream and cookies back here. Thank you so much, Todd. Be safe, and we'll have you back in studio next week when you're back in town. When we're both back in town.
All right. Look forward to it. Take care, all. Appreciate
all right.
it.
Thank you. And Ken and Dave, I know that I didn't want to leave you out of the opportunity to respond as far as you know where we are as a country when it comes to gun ownership.
In 1980, I was hired by National Handgun Control to stage a demonstration at the National Republican Convention.
Okay.
And that's how far back I go. And there is no issue that I've ever been involved with or ever cared about that has so frustrated me more than this issue. It seems as if all common sense has been hijacked. The Congress is in the death vice grip of the National Rifle Association. It seems as if whatever they want gets passed. And there's no counterbalance on the other side. People are afraid to stand up to them. And it's just so frustrating. So I have almost zero hope that anything meaningful will come out of what just happened in Las Vegas from a legislative perspective. I'm sure that the bump stocks, the NRA is smart to join the crowd to ban bump stocks. But other than that, I'm not sure what's going to – I don't expect anything to happen because it never has.
Me neither.
I think that was really important because I can't remember the last time that I've ever heard or seen the NRA back off on something like that.
Well, I can't either, and I think they did it because it was pretty – because after what had happened – it was so stunning and so shocking to everyone. And Republicans in Congress within the first 24 to 36 hours, leadership were taking a position against it. So they just figured out, okay, we're going to just cut our losses and we'll join the crowd look reasonable.
But the leadership didn't take that position without consulting with the NRA first. Guarantee it.
Right.
That's probably true.
You know, the sad thing is, I said this Monday night, I was so frustrated. To me, what happened in Las Vegas was in some ways not shocking. It was inevitable because you cannot have the massive proliferation of these high-powered military-grade weapons, these things, whether it's a bump stock or something else, in this society without having something like this happen. Frankly, I've been expecting something like this to happen since 9/11.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. I'm shocked it hasn't happened before more than once.
And I promise you, sadly, it's going to happen again. And, you know, the story that came out afterwards was that turns out he had also rented a hotel room at the Blackstone in Chicago overlooking Lollapalooza. And he apparently had been thinking about doing this in Lollapalooza. Why he did it in Vegas and didn't do it at Lollapalooza, I have no idea. I'm grateful. I had a lot of friends who were at Lollapalooza. But it's horrific. It shouldn't be allowed to happen. And, you know, if he had committed this act with a bomb, if he had killed 58 people and wounded 500 people with a bomb, we immediately would have been focused on where did he get it? How did he get it? How do we prevent people from getting it again? Just like after Oklahoma City. But because he used a gun, all of a sudden you've got people on one side and people on the other side and people saying, no, you can't do this. And you're like, are you insane? How many times does this have to happen before we get sane again in this country on this issue?
Well, you would think Sandy Hook would have been enough.
One would have thought Sandy Hook would have been
and
enough.
I get so angry. I try not to think about it because I really feel, as a citizen, I feel almost virtually powerless on this issue. I feel as if I have no voice. Since 1980, I've been working on this. And I kind of threw in the towel a few years ago when I just kind of concluded that the way the country is structured right now, you're not going to get any meaningful gun control at all.
Right. No. One guy, 9 minutes, 550 casualties.
And the thing is, this time, you know, in contrast to Sandy Hook, is the issue of mental illness that people brought up, you know, regards to his, where he was, what had led up to that, the concerns, the red, you know, the alarms that went off, the red flags that went up. But in this situation, it doesn't seem as though there was anything that could, except for the number of guns that he owned and the amount of ammunition he was buying.
Well, I also found it interesting that he checked into the hotel with 23 bags. Now, I've never checked. When I check into a hotel with five or six, I think that's a lot. 23 bags.
Can I? You know what's funny? I was thinking about that, and I thought, but it's Vegas. I mean.
Yeah, but 23 bags.
But, Dave, it's Vegas. It could be a showman. Cash. It could be cash. It could be a magician. It could be, you know.
Yeah, it could be dead bodies.
Here's the one thing I was thinking about as well, Patty, Dave and Ken, and that's this. Nevada's got some of the most relaxed conceal carry laws.
Open carry.
And it didn't do anyone any good.
No, this was, you're right. There was no way a good guy with a gun was going to stop a bad guy in the 20 whatever floor with that level of firepower. Yeah,
but that's not what I've heard this week.
What's that?
From the gun folks.
Oh, right.
We need to have more guns. People need to be able to carry them more freely so we can stop stuff like this. Oh, really?
Yes, had we just been shooting randomly in the air, that would have been much better.
Before we move on, I'm sorry, was somebody going to say something?
No, go ahead.
No. I do want to say, in all the remarkable stories that are coming out, the number of heroes on that field who were helping each other, whether they were trained rescuers and first responders and military people who were really helping each other. I think that, you know, I don't know if more guns would have done anything, but I do think there is something to start thinking about is when you go anywhere, when you're going to a venue, when you're in a big crowd, you know, and this isn't about being afraid all the time, but it is about being conscious of your surroundings. It is about, you know, and even down to the small, stupid things like not wearing flip-flops when you're going to be in a big crowd. And that's just if there's a, you know, something happens in the middle of the crowd and there's a stampede and people start running or something. Do take little things, take stock, learn from this in ways that, you know, whether it means be aware of where the exits are, be aware of, you know, just think for a moment, if something happens, what would I do? Just like when you get on a plane, just like when you go to a comedy club or a theater, you should know where the exits are. And I know I hate to use that. This is an example of that. But just I just am so moved by the number of stories where people stepped up and helped each other, put their bodies in the way of bullets for strangers who stayed out on the field to give first aid because they knew what to do and didn't think of their safety first. So do yourselves a favor. Think of your safety. Think of what you would do in a situation where you or yourself, you or those around you might be hurt. Let's take a quick break here. More when we come back on 720 WGN. You are listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in our Allstate Showcase Studios West. I've got my last broadcast from L.A. tonight, back in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Chicago. We've got Eric Elk of Fulcrum, Illinois, Dave Lundy of Aileron Communications, and Ken Jakubowski of Sirius Enterprises. And on the line with us, joining us on our conversations about weapons, Second Amendment, about where these violent acts might be coming from, we have John O'Malley, who wants to join us. Hey, John, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Patty. How are you? Former fellow Northwest Sider, by the way.
Oh, whereabouts did you live?
Jefferson Park.
All right. Where'd you move to?
No, ma'am. I'm here. I live in Jefferson Park.
Oh, so do I. So we're neighbors. All right. What'd you want to say, John?
We are. So I'm listening to your program on the way home tonight, and I also do some security analysis, law enforcement analysis for WGN-TV and also Channel 7, ABC Chicago. And so what you guys are talking about is a typical concept of hunters and howlers that was developed way back in the day by Secret Service. And this guy, obviously, the Las Vegas shooter I'm talking about, falls under the category of hunter.
They lay low,
and they have no visuals, footprint that we can ascertain, and they act. And the howlers are people who are sending letters, well, nowadays emails and phone calls to elected officials or celebrities and things of that nature. They just want to be heard. They want someone to talk to. But the hunters are the ones that the Secret Service and other people fear because they lay low in the weeds and then they all of a sudden act. So this is unfortunately a classic example of someone who falls under the hunter category.
But where would you put Adam Lanza in that sort of those one of those two categories? Because, I mean, it doesn't seem as though he was a howler. He wasn't somebody who was sending letters or leaving some sort of a political statement or anything like that. And he doesn't seem to me to be as much of a hunter, unless he was, unless I'm not aware of what his plans were. Would you consider him to be a hunter?
Potentially, and there's always the people that are outliers that, you know, don't fit in necessarily fit in a category. But it's just, you know, so unfortunately, in a law enforcement community, in a security community, we learn from incidents that take place and then make adjustments. So, you know, this is a learning environment for law enforcement in general. Because we'll take the three-day country music festival that happened in Las Vegas, and there were obviously extensive security plans that were put into place to extend the perimeter, which, you know, you do on an outdoor festival. You want to push that perimeter of security out away from the actual event.
Right. But yeah, you want to see what the sight lines are. I mean, you know, when a president is coming into Chicago, they have the sight lines and they have people positioned on rooftops and they see where are the possible vulnerabilities. So if you have a crowd of 20,000 people, I don't think it's beyond the realm of logic to think that we need to start thinking what those sight lines are, what the vulnerabilities are, what the dangers are. Don't you think, guys? Eric, Dave?
But aren't the vulnerabilities innumerable? You know, you think about you know, we were talking about Las Vegas, but going back to Lollapalooza, I mean, there's just a row of hotels and office buildings and across the street. So the vulnerabilities, how do you secure that?
Well, that's just it. So you're not so this is something now that law enforcement and private security, who the event holders, you know, the people who run, let's take Lollapalooza for instance. The people who are the promoters of that event have to now extend and think about, you know, before this incident occurred, they're not going to say, well, what about all the hotels on Michigan Avenue? Is that a potential threat? But, you know,
now they do. Okay, I would now.
Now they do. Of course. And after, unfortunately, it takes an event such as Las Vegas to put in the minds of security professionals the what ifs. So I can tell you without a doubt that the people who put on this country festival in Las Vegas, never in their imagination would they assume that the Mandalay Bay, 500 yards across the street, would be a potential threat to the festival that they were putting on. They're looking at people coming in with weapons or other things at the perimeter of that country music festival. Same thing with Lollapalooza. My former life, before I left federal law enforcement, I was involved at a high level of planning on the Chicago Marathon, the 2005 World Series, other events that took place, large events that took place in Chicago, where we talked about what is the potential threat. And you never would have imagined thinking, can someone rent a room at a high-rise hotel and potentially rain terror on this event that's taking place on the ground level?
Right.
Now, when a president comes into town, obviously the Secret Service looks at where is the president going to be? Is the president going to present out in the open at a particular area? Then, of course, you're extending that perimeter for that singular event out to potentially high-rise facilities in any given city.
Right.
But that is a one-off, right? When you have a three-day, four-day event, you're not thinking of someone thinking outside that box that they would – I mean, think about what this guy did. He rented rooms specifically – asking for a view of an event.
Such a good point. And here's my thing too, guys. I mean, Eric, Dave, Ken, I mean, do you think that hotel security changes the way they check people in? Do we, I mean, not security, do we have to now go through security in some hotels?
Well, almost immediately in Las Vegas this week, several major hotels, I don't know about all of them, but I know several of them have started wanding people at the check-in desk. They would wand the...
Really?
Yeah, they've wanded them as well as certain luggage.
Oof. Wow. Yeah, I mean, that might be the new reality.
You know, the one question, though, and this gets back to the bump stock issue, you're always fighting the last war, right? You're doing that from a military context, and you're doing that from a security context. So that's why suddenly we ban, you know, you ban shoes, or you got to take off your shoes, and you got to ban liquids and all the rest of it. And it raises the question of, are we limited by our imagination? Is security limited by the power of our imagination?
Right.
Because clearly this person had an imagination that said, hey, I got a perspective. I could commit. You wonder, was he trying to commit mass murder? I mean, the fact this guy had no social media profile, there's so few clues. It's part of what's frustrating, because you want to be able to say, aha, there is the threat. I get where it's coming from. I could deal with that. With this guy, I don't even know where do you begin?
Well, right-wing media in the 24 hours after the event was writing that he was a liberal. No, he was a liberal attacking conservatives at a country music,
right.
Yeah.
Which is
yeah.
so ridiculous, because yeah. Lollapalooza would have been exactly the opposite.
But you know what? And I don't know why they should have been praying and thinking. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, broadcasting live from our Allstate Showcase Studios. Wes, I'm in Los Angeles for just one more night. I can hear the waves crashing against the sand from where I sit. But I'll tell you something, I can't wait to come back home, see everybody, see my family. I miss my boys and my husband. And I'm looking forward to seeing you guys next week. Ken Jakubowski, Eric Elk, Dave Lundy, all in the studio. Oh, by the way, Elliot, I told Elliot to stay home tonight since it was a shorter show. You know, he's got a long drive. So I waved him off and told him to hang out at home. And we'll see him also next week. And I want to thank our texters who are joining the conversation with comments about why perhaps, you know, we have a lot of speculation as to why Stephen Paddock did not really decide to, I guess, bring his massacre to Chicago. And perhaps it was police presence, the way that we function as a city. I don't know if that's why. And also the texter who wanted to say, you know, if we can't get rid of these weapons, perhaps it's restricting the number of weapons people can buy. I know that Dave Lundy wanted to congratulate, or we all want to congratulate Eric Elk and the people he works with. I know a lot of people are excited tonight about some news that came down. Dave, why don't you go ahead and tell people what we're congratulating Eric Elk about?
Because he's just so darn handsome.
Isn't he, though? I mean, really.
Oh, wait. No, that's not it. I'm sorry. I was talking about myself. No. Hey.
Oh, hello.
No, we want to congratulate Eric for helping to lead the fight to kill the pop tax, the dreaded pop tax. Today they announced that the sponsor of the repeal bill has enough co-sponsors to override a threatened veto by Tony Preckwinkle. And Chuy Garcia was, I guess, one of the last commissioners to come on board. And essentially what all the commissioners who came on board and who changed their position said is that their constituents are just absolutely livid at this tax. And, you know, the kudos to Eric's group and the folks he worked with. And I promised I would not neglect to mention Irma and Rob Carr for the lawsuit that they had filed, the one where Tony Preckwinkle basically threatened to take away their First Amendment rights. It was a concerted effort, and yet I keep having these arguments with my friends, my mostly liberal, but not all, some conservative, my friends, who insist that this is all just big soda manipulating all of us and all of our, you know, getting us angry. It's like, no, this was a bad tax. It deserved to die. And God willing, next Tuesday, when the vote is taken, it will actually die.
Yeah. The one change to the legislation, which came about today, it's how they, it's the way in which they were able to get Chuy Garcia to vote for repeal. They moved the expiration date of the tax to December 1st. So that it falls at the end of some budgetary date of some kind that Chuy Garcia was concerned about. So we'll still have to put up with this through October and November, the first part of the holiday season over Thanksgiving. But then on December 1st, it will come to a crashing end.
Yeah. Well, and Eric, first of all, when did you find out? Yeah, go ahead, Eric.
So I think that, there were a lot of folks working on this issue. There were, we had teams out canvassing, going door to door. I mean, just everything. And from the beginning, the polling showed that, you know, there was just no support for it whatsoever. And even after a New York billionaire came in spending millions of dollars on ads, he couldn't move the needle, couldn't generate support. And I would just say that, you know, we've got a long way to go until Tuesday's committee and Wednesday full board meeting. And my guess is that President Prinkwinkle and some of the unions that are invested in this are not going to let up, and try to twist some arms and change some minds. So I think that listeners should continue to weigh in with their commissioners and let them know how outraged they are with this and that they will hold them accountable at the ballot box.
And here's the thing, is that as crazy and as angering as this was for so many people, I still laugh that Ken Jakubowski is the one that came to me first and with a stack of papers going, can you believe what they're planning to do? And it was way back in the wintertime, like in January or February.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. Ken. Yeah, it was.
Or maybe even at the end of 2016.
I think it was in December, November, December. But, you know, I'd like to thank the folks listening who let their county commissioners know exactly how they feel and who may have taken other steps to voice their displeasure with this tax. There was a lot of citizen action with this. The community rose up and let their voices be heard in letters to the editor, in phone calls, letters to county commissioners, attending at meetings and being very loud about their opinion. So this goes to show that that when citizens decide to take on an issue, there's great power there, a great power in numbers.
Well, and there's actually something really interesting that happened this time that's happening to the governor, but it happened in big time to Tony Preckwinkle, and that is people started to take out their frustration on the petitions that people were circulating to get these folks back on the ballot for the next election. So what happened is that Tony Preckwinkle was circulating petitions, and committeemen were finding that their precinct captains would return these petitions with these love notes on them, where people were swearing at Tony Preckwinkle and vowing they would never sign the petition, or they would sign the petition, but they would write a nasty note, or they would write, you know, profanity on the petition. I've never heard of this in my life everywhere. And it's a reflection of the level of anger that people had over this issue.
Well, and I think that, when people
go ahead, Eric.
When people start to see, the headlines that, talk about, $130 million in pay raises at the county, so much of the staff getting paid over $200,000. And, look, I think that, people have to remember this is public service, and it, to some degree, it's a calling. It's not just a no-show job. And, when I was in public service and hiring people into our office, some of the young folks, one of the conversations I would have is, we're not making a whole lot of money. And if this salary, you can't live on this, or you can't, you feel you have to do something else, then this isn't for you. But you have to remember, this is public service, and it's not meant to be a lifelong career necessarily. It's you do your time, you do your service, and then you move on to something else.
And I think those who are blaming this on Big Soda totally missed the point. I firmly believe this had almost zero to do with Big Soda. This was the overwhelming reaction of citizens who feel they're taxed enough. This was the straw that broke the camel's back, and they're fed up with it.
And to that point, I think it'll be
it
very
was so
empowering.
Poorly done.
Very empowering,
yeah,
for
Go
the
ahead.
Voters.
Well, and I hope that then this is something that, you know, they can see that there are other issues that affect them in ways that are significant as well. In addition to the soda tax, I hope that this is what we've been talking about on this show. It's why I started going to Springfield, is you can make a difference, and they do need to listen to you. And this, as you said, Eric, they will listen to you if enough people start to stand up and say, we will not stand for this. We stand up and say, we won't stand for this. You know what I mean?
Right.
But, you know, this will not be tolerated. And it has to be consistent. It can't just be when it's something that, well, I don't like that because when I go to the grocery store, I can see it on my receipt. Well, there are things happening in your community every single day that fundamentally are wrong, that the government should be doing a better job at. So, yes, take this and help it propel you to be activated, to be informed, and to be, you know, somebody who really challenges and asks questions from their politicians, from their public servants.
Totally. I think the president really couldn't defend it or articulate, you know, why and the how.
It was so arbitrary. There were so many aspects of this tax that were indefensible. And every time one of my friends would try to say, yeah, but obesity and diabetes, and I'm like, fine, and diet soda and low calorie orange juice, and like, it's not the way this thing was done was absolutely positively screwed up from the conception to the implementation. And frankly, I felt personally like Toni Preckwinkle was becoming a tax bully. And so what she did when the Irma lawsuit, the Illinois Retail Merchants Association lawsuit, was filed, when she said, well, I'm going to sue Irma. She tried to sue Irma for $16 million in the delayed tax collection. You're like, oh, my God, you have lost touch with the people. And yet here's the thing. Nobody is challenging her for re-election.
Yeah, that's really unfortunate. I mean, she ran and was elected on repealing or rolling back the sales tax that President Stroger had put into place. After she was elected, she put it back into place. And since then, you know, they've had increased the sales tax. There have been, you know, multiple other taxes, whether it's on the parking. You know, they've done all the sins with the cigarettes and the booze and everything else. But, you know, what's next? You know, should the potato chip and, you know, donuts and confectionery folks start to worry and gear up because they may be next?
Leave my chips alone.
Yeah.
You know, but frankly, I would feel much more comfortable. And this may be where we start to differ. But if you want to do a sugar tax, okay.
Yeah, all of it. Candy bars.
Go across the board.
Tax it at a very low level, but tax all of it.
All of it. I agree.
But that's not what
like
this
booze.
Was.
Right. Like booze. If you make it like booze or tobacco, fine. And if you want to do that, that's one thing. And the other thing, and I have to, we have to run to a break, but my other issue, and there's so many problems with the way this was done, but when you exclude people who are on SNAP and say it's for health, but people who have lower income are excluded from this tax, and then you're like, well, then you're not helping people who also need help when it comes to their health. Let's take a quick break here. We have a phone call. I think we're going to talk to Paul Farivar about an event at a comedy club tonight, and I want to find out what went down as an audience member was removed or thrown out. I don't know. It sounds exciting. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in our Allstate Showcase Studios. Wes joining us in studio in Chicago on Michigan Avenue are Ken Jacobowski, Eric Elkin, Dave Lundy. We've been talking about the pop tax. I know they call it the sugar tax, the soda pop tax. It's any drink that had artificial sweeteners, sugary sweeteners, added all kinds of things. We don't even know anymore. It's not going to matter soon because they're about to vote it down. Someone took a breath. It's Eric. Go ahead.
Hey, you know, the one thing neglected, you know, and I was saying that there were many, many folks involved in this. The one that I think really deserves a lot of credit is Commissioner Sean Morrison, who introduced the repeal ordinance and was meeting one-on-one with so many of his colleagues on the board and, you know, explaining to some of them the how they were wrong. And working with them, and So a lot of credit goes to Commissioner Morrison and you know, getting some of these folks to come over to the right side on this.
And I know that a lot of people were involved. It was and I was fascinated by the way, you know, the conversation started to really seem to pick up last week. And I know that with John Daly moving forward, it really kind of encouraged other people to also decide to come forward and say they were going to change their votes. We have a listener on the line who wanted to join us. KJ, how are you doing tonight? Hi.
Hi. Well, I live unincorporated Cook County, in a suburb, unincorporated Cook County. And as of January 1st of this year, they stuck us now. If we, for instance, if we want to sell our, we can't sell, we're going to leave our apartment, we're going to sell it, but we can't find anybody to buy it. So obviously we can have it rented with our board for a year, 2 years. Well, now she has stuck a tax on us that we have to pay, and whether it's one unit, two units, three units, $60, and we have to pay that now. I think it's yearly. They're going to, you have to have someone that, before you can rent it, someone from their, the board or whatever, whoever comes out, has to look over the apartment before you can even rent it. And my neighbor across the hall, she did it a couple of months ago because they bought another place and they're renting. And when she came back, I said, did you get it all resolved? She said, you should see the paperwork. She said, they don't even, because it's so new to them, they didn't know what to do.
Wow.
Well, that sounds familiar.
Yeah. So I've been here 40-some years out here, and all of a sudden now we're being taxed the same way the people in Chicago are. You know, when those apartments are being rented for 3 months or 2 months or 3 months when people come in, now we're being assessed a tax now.
Huh. Yeah, I'm not familiar with any of that. Do you guys have anything in regards to what they can do?
Well, yeah. What is you know, where is that money going now?
No idea.
That's a good question. Have you reached out to your Cook County Commissioner?
He's very nice, as a matter of fact, and I called him a week ago regarding the repeal for the and she said he's already voting, you know, go ahead, repeal it. So. But no, I haven't. And my question is, why all of a sudden unincorporated, do we, even though we're unincorporated Cook County, why are we being stuck after 40-some years?
Yeah, that doesn't make sense. However, the problem is that anytime they can, they, you know, because I don't think they're good with the public money, they're constantly looking for ways to grab more of it.
Yeah, but unincorporated, we don't have any rights. I don't belong to a village. I belong to a township.
Yeah, but I mean, you're getting taxed from the township, you know, the county, the state, the feds. I mean, it doesn't end.
Yeah, okay.
So I'm just saying, you know, what next for us? And can't we get her out?
Well, as Eric mentioned, yeah, there's no one running against Tony Preckwinkle in the next election. So
can't beat somebody with nobody.
You know, I thought for sure that Commissioner Richard Boykin was going to get in that race, and he announced earlier this week or last week that he was going to take a pass and just run for re-election. And I'm glad he's on the board. I think he would have given President Preckwinkle a great run.
What kind of backgrounds do people have in the Cook County board? I don't know what I don't even think about it that much. It's just kind of people on the ballot, and I kind of do the best I can as far as voting for them. But are people even paying attention when they vote for the Cook County board?
I think that's part of the biggest issue here, is that so many of those commissioners have been under the radar for so many years. You know, there's a lot of folks who don't pay attention to that.
It's interesting. Well, they're paying attention. Well, they're paying attention now, and let's, as I said before, keep that attention sustained. Find out who's making choices for you, because if they don't hear from you, they'll act without you. Let's take a quick break here, and more after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in our Allstate Showcase Studios West. I'm in Los Angeles for my last night out here, just 100 feet from where the waves are crashing into the sand, back home in Chicago in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue, where the waves are not that far away from you guys either. I mean, I think you guys need to go down to Lake Michigan, put your toes in the water. No.
Stop.
No.
Hashtag
no.
Jealous.
No.
No, thanks.
No, all right. It was just
a thought.
You know,
the sunsets with the whiskey. I mean, come on. You're killing me.
I've been watching the sunset almost every night here, and it's been really wonderful. I've never had an Airbnb like this before, and I will be back again. This is the best. I'm hesitant to write a glowing review for it because, I mean, I'm going to write a very nice review about it, but I don't want too many people to snatch it up.
I will say this. At this very moment, it is 69 degrees in Chicago.
Yes.
69 in L.A., 66 in San Diego, and 64 in Carlsbad. So we're okay in Chicago tonight.
And with the weather instead of Roger Bash, we have Ken Chikowski.
Roger, you have no fear.
Well, how about this? How's this for a pivot? Hey, Dave, how's the weather in the White House?
it is chilly for the moron in the White House.
Very frosty.
Sorry, I'm not calling him a moron. I'm just quoting Rex Tillerson.
Well, that's the thing, too, is that I saw that there was whoever was reporting on it. He said that his source said that Tillerson did not say that President Trump is a moron. He said he was an effing moron.
Yeah,
yes.
That was
Stephanie Ruhle
Stephanie
from
Ruhle.
MSNBC.
Yeah, she was very emphatic about that.
Well, yes, in fact, she said it every day this week.
Yes, and she says it with gusto.
Yes.
Look, we were talking earlier, and I said, if you've got to do a press conference to say that you didn't call the president a moron, you 100% did call the president a moron.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, it's not funny at all.
For those who wonder what a non-denial denial is, watch that press conference.
Yes, when Tillerson said, I'm not going to talk about such kind of petty nonsense, that means he said it.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, Eric, Dave, and I have all done this for a living for a long time, and the non-denial denial, those who are very good at that tend to be very good in our business and tend to do very well in public. And that was, I give him my hats off to Rex Tillerson. He handled it perfectly. I guess you don't get to be the head of a Fortune 50 company without learning how to do that.
Yeah, except he didn't handle it perfectly because he handled it in a way that guaranteed Donald Trump would be livid.
But
Trump wanted him to deny it, to say, no, I never did it. But what happens is that Donald Trump is burning through these cabinet officers in a remarkable clip, and he's burning through them before he even fully stocked his government. I mean, you still don't have a home an HHS secretary. You've got these cabinet officers that are leaving. I'm surprised that another one didn't leave today. Tom Price, of course, last Friday. And Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, with the wife, you remember the Marie Antoinette wife, who got into it with that Twitter person.
Yep.
It turned out that Steve Mnuchin spent $811,000 in government planes, or in private planes
travel.
That he charged to, and the excuse that he used was, well, I might have to take a phone call in midair.
Yes, yes.
I was like, are you kidding me? Why does that man still have a job? Why?
I don't even know. And am I reading this correctly that the John Kelly,
yes,
the chief of staff, John Kelly's phone might have been compromised since December?
His phone compromised. He now has a new phone.
But
Chief of Staff Kelly is also there's a story tonight that says he is close to 1 foot out the door. That he of his own decision that he has been for some time now bemoaning at the end of each day, what am I doing here?
Which becomes very scary.
Very scary
because between Kelly, Mattis, Tillerson, I think those are some of the folks that are actually keeping the country safe.
Well, as Bob Corker, senator from Tennessee, said just this past week, he said that the Tillerson, Kelly, and Mattis are the ones keeping us from chaos. And, of course, everybody knew what he meant. He meant Donald Trump is the chaos. And when asked about it the next day at the press briefing, Sarah Sanders said, well, that's ridiculous. Donald Trump is the one keeping us from the chaos. It's like, nobody believes you. You're a bad liar.
And what is the – I know that they talked about this briefly during her press conference today, that there were 33,000 jobs lost in the reports from last month, the first time in 7 years that jobs have actually gone down. They had they expected it to go up by 9,000. There have been –
Actually, 90.
Was it 90?
Yeah.
They thought there was going to be 90?
Yeah, yes. They thought there was going to be 90. Actually, I had heard 80, but they thought they were going to be somewhere in that range.
Whoa.
And it turned out we lost 33,000.
Well, and it was blamed on the two hurricanes.
Okay.
Right. And it's possible, but if the two hurricanes did that, then you weren't going to get 80,000 in the first place.
No.
So, look, the economy was growing fairly well under Barack Obama. Wages in his last year had finally started to show meaningful improvement. And it's continued to do so under Donald Trump, a little bit weaker than it was in Barack's last year. But, you know, Donald Trump keeps trying to take credit. Well, good luck with that. I mean, you really haven't accomplished anything. And if I may quote my touche partner, Christopher Roebling, you know, he will tell you, hey, if Donald Trump doesn't generate a real strong, solid 3% economic growth, real wage gains in a meaningful way, he's going to be out.
It's insane. I'm trying to wrap my mind around everything that the choices that are being made as far as Eric, can you explain to me the function of or the desire to restrict access to birth control? Because I'm really confused about this, and I think part of this has to do with the language and the words birth control, because 1.5 million women use hormone management in order to regulate other than planning their pregnancies. So why is a medical treatment being restricted so hard and so vigilantly by the right?
Good question.
Okay.
Well, isn't it, I mean, this gets back to the Hobby Lobby case, right?
But again, 1.5 million women use hormone management. We call it birth control because that's something that we have taught. We've called it since the 1960s. But if women are using it to treat estrogen deficiencies, if they're using it to treat endometriosis, which 10% of the population, a female population, suffers from, which is a thickening of the wall of the uterus, and it helps manage the pain and the side effects of that, I don't understand why we're even having this conversation. Is it at the point now where we need to change the medical classification to hormone management and take it, and then it's none of your business why women are taking it?
Well, I think you're looking at this too granular. I will ask you this question: under who was the president when this was all when the expansion of this right occurred?
That'd be Barack Obama, Ken.
And ding, 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 ding. That's your answer as to why they did what they did.
Right, but again, it goes back to my question. Can we call it hormone therapy and end this debate and take it off the table?
If hormone therapy was expanded under Barack Obama, it too would be repealed by this administration.
I doubt that very much. I doubt that it's just because it was some... And I understand what you're saying, that anything that Barack Obama did is
They're rolling back everything. Everything. Even the most innocuous regulation. The list of regulations that they have rolled back is extraordinary. I mean, it's so long, you would need three programs without commercials to just read the list.
But my point being, if it's called hormone therapy, it's no one's business as to what it's being used for. You cannot ask a woman if she's using it for whatever that reason is. The employer cannot ask.
Well, everyone...
You recategorize it.
Everyone always looks at birth control from the perspective of the woman. Hey guys, it's for you too. I mean,
well, yeah. but to your point, Patty, I mean, the numbers of women that use birth control who are not trying to actually control birth, who are not engaged sexually but are trying to control their hormones. I have many women friends who use it for exactly that reason.
Yep.
But look, you're talking about an administration that is not exactly sensitive to the needs of women. You're talking about an administration that, you know, Donald Trump is happy to throw this one as a bone to the religious right, because the religious right has objected to this all along. He throws it as a bone, and he does not care who suffers. He doesn't care. It's not in his DNA.
Just like, as
we all saw in Puerto Rico, this guy has an empathy gap that is astonishing. I mean, you know, we can never forget what we saw in Puerto Rico as Donald Trump thought he was at a Bulls game tossing T-shirts to the fans, the way he was tossing the relief supplies and the paper towels to people who are victims. So why would you expect empathy for women, especially, you know, tomorrow is the 1 year anniversary of the Billy Bush tape.
Well, and now we're hearing that there's another producer from The Apprentice. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Eric. You wanted to join.
Well, just, you know, on the whole notion, I want to just kind of try to keep something in perspective. And it is the prerogative of the new administration or the, you know, newly elected administration to come in and do certain things. And when President Obama was elected, when he came in, even before he took office, he had his transition team putting together things to roll back certain measures from the Bush administration. So this is not something that is completely unheard of or uncommon. I mean, it happens from administration to administration, especially when you have a change in power of party in the White House. Just for clarification.
Yeah, W's off of a keyboard, right?
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. And,
come on now.
To some extent, Patty, it's why I don't get as exercised about the regulation rollbacks. Many of them are infuriating, but you know what? It's the system. Elections have consequences, and
we
lost, and he can do through executive order and through agency order, they can do so much, and that's what they're doing. It literally appears that if something was given birth during the Obama administration, they're going to do their best to kill it, no matter what it is. And it seems like that there's some sort of an order that has gone down within every agency to roll back anything and everything that Barack Obama's administration had anything to do with.
Well, and you know the same thing that President Obama said each administration, when they come in, you know, one of the things they've said is that they are trying to fulfill campaign promises to supporters and things like that. And so that's the same thing that Trump has said. It doesn't mean I agree with it, but it is matter of fact, and it's what happens with each administration.
It's the system. It's the process. It's upsetting. It's infuriating, but it's the way, you know. We got to work all the harder in 4 years to make sure that we're back in power and that these sorts of things don't happen.
Yeah, it's people again. This goes back to even the soda tax. Pay attention, be invested, be involved, and be proactive. Otherwise, you know, they're coming for your stuff next.
You know, I have to just share something. I just saw this tweet. Some of the our friends on the right. Are historical revisionists extraordinaire. So the right wing, what is he, a thought leader? He's a right wing writer, Dinesh D'Souza, wrote a tweet tonight saying, "Hitler was not anti-gay. He refused to purge gay brown shirts from Nazi ranks, saying that he had no problem as long as they were good fighters."
Why is that even
wrong with these people?
Why does that even need to be said? I don't understand where that's...
So is Dinesh D'Souza? You
know, so Dinesh D'Souza, who I think has been somewhat discredited in more ways than one.
But it's the same kind of historical revisionism that Donald Trump says, well, the Nazis, some of them were, you know, some of the people marching were good people in Charlottesville.
I agree with you. I think it's something, though, that we shouldn't even, put their name out there. I don't want to highlight it or give them any recognition.
It's an idiotic statement by an idiot. I mean,
many people right now on the right, and particularly Trump and a lot of people in his administration, are just as idiotic as this.
This is
nuts. It just makes me crazy. I'm like, I'm sorry. We lived through the 20th century. The people, you know, gays in World War II, they wore pink triangles and they were massacred. I'm like, come on. Anyway, sorry. I realize it may seem random, but I think it's tied in with the way that the folks on the right, you know, why are they doing things? Why are they rolling these things back? Why do facts not matter anymore?
Also folks out there like Bill Kristol from the Weekly Standard who are questioning Trump, you know, at every turn, and you know the vice president's chief of staff, Nick Ayers, who kind of got into some hot water this week for giving a briefing to donors and talking about basically going after a lot of the members of Congress if they don't pass the president's agenda.
Yeah. And, well, go ahead, Eric. We'll end on yours, Ken. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and you know, the president then spends more time this week tweeting about fake news, encouraging folks to investigate the news media. You know, what people need to understand, and our listeners, I hope, grasp this. I hope we all grasp this, that when somebody attacks the media and with fake news and other similar attacks, they're really attacking the foundations of our democracy, because our democracy does not work without a free and independent and aggressive media press.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. And obviously, you know, that makes the president very uncomfortable.
Let's take a break here. And when we come back, tell me something good, for the love of God. Please tell me something good. 312-981-7200. Give us a call. What are you celebrating tonight? 312-981-7200. More after this on 720 WGN.
Tell me something good.
I'll tell you something good right now. The Cubs won game one of the playoffs against the Washington Nationals. How cool is that? 3-0. Hendricks on the mound. I only had a chance to watch the end of the game, but so exciting, you guys. I'm so excited for the Cubbies again. It's time to get excited. You guys don't sound excited. Hello?
We're very excited.
Are you pacing yourself?
Yeah, you know, it's going to be a long month of October. I am actually quite excited. I can't wait to go to the games in Chicago. I think the Cubs are going to, you know, Ken here, Mr. Jacobowski, was telling me all year long, well, I just don't know that the Cubs can get through the Nationals. I don't know if the Cubs can get through the Nationals. Sure looked like they got through the Nationals okay tonight, Kenny.
Yeah, well, the Max Scherzer injury just totally changed everything. And to some extent, the Bryce Harper injury. It changed the power dynamic between the two teams. In the history of Major League Baseball, in a best three out of five series, the team that wins the first game wins the series 71% of the time. So the Cubs now have a stranglehold on this series.
Well, there you go. Jerry's on the line. Jerry, what are you celebrating tonight?
I'm celebrating the fact that you guys are on the radio and you're keeping hope alive, and go Cubs.
There you go. Go Cubbies.
Go
Thank
Cubs.
You, Jerry. Have a wonderful
you
weekend. Thank you
okay.
so much. Hey, and I'm celebrating something else, although I'm a little bit sad. I wish I could be in town for this. It was an amazing event Saturday night at the Palmer House Hilton. It's Nobody Sleeps a Monsters Ball, brought to you by the For the Love of Chocolate Foundation, and our friends over at Chicago Costume are, you know, really going to do it up big time for it's, you know, it's kind of like a Hallowed Eve. There's a cast of decadent demons and ghouls. It's a monster's ball. So everyone check that out. You can go to eventbrite.com. Look for Nobody Sleeps a Monster's Ball. Very exciting. What are you guys excited about? Do you get excited about Halloween? Eric, are you a Halloween kind of guy?
Yeah, it's pretty spooky.
I love Halloween. I went to the best haunted house ever. House of Torment does it up right in Morton Grove. Best haunted house I have ever seen.
Yeah, that's the one that you said is not appropriate for a 7.5-year-old.
No! No. It was barely appropriate for the adults that I was with.
Well,
it was,
my daughter, I think, rivaling Christmas, my daughter, that's where Halloween is. And so we've spent the week going around different shops buying all sorts of different stuff. My house now looks like a haunted house.
I think that, like, there are usually, like, some pretty good, like, haunted trail events throughout the city or in the suburbs. There's some really good, like, spooky enough, but not like what we saw at the House of Torment for kids under 10 or 13. I would say House of Torment, maybe high school age, would be about where I might start for that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm.
All right. Yeah, oh, yeah.
Check that out.
Oh, it's good.
Well, I have about 13 zombie heads in different places in our house. There's so much stuff that we have that has been given to us over the years.
But that has nothing to do with Halloween, right?
That's right.
The zombies in your house? That's nothing to do with Halloween.
No, it's nothing to do with Halloween.
You ever scare yourself when you, like, get up in the middle of the night?
It has not happened yet, but I did put a very large and very real-looking spider in my wife's pillow tonight, so I'm waiting. I don't think she's discovered it yet, because I haven't heard anything from her, so I'm waiting to hear.
Oh, wait. We have a caller on the line.
Yes.
And she's,
Yeah, right? Uh-oh, look out. Hey, guys, tell me something good. What do you got? What do you got, Ken?
Hey, you know, first of all, we're all alive.
Yes.
And this weekend is a it's just one of the best weekends to be in Chicago. You have the marathon Sunday. We've got great weather. You've got Mitch Trubisky Monday night. You've got Cubs Monday. It's just a fun time to go out and just be with your neighbors, enjoy the community, and celebrate Chicago, and keep in mind all those who've lost their lives in the past week, not only in Las Vegas, but here in Chicago and elsewhere from gun violence.
Ken? I mean, Eric?
Well, I'd echo what Ken said, but, you know, obviously something good. Pretty happy that looks like we may be on a path to repeal this beverage tax.
Yeah.
Okay. Matt Sheerenrath, who was in studio a couple weeks ago playing with the Early Sixes, that whole band of guys is running the marathon on Sunday for the Anti-Cruelty Society.
Oh, good,
that's wonderful.
Good luck, Matt.
Yeah. How about you, Dave?
You know, I keep wanting to say something more creative than the Cubs. I keep.
Oh, that's Cubs are good. Cubs,
yeah,
I love it.
Tell Patty about your running of the marathon this coming weekend.
Yeah, I'm actually running the marathon backwards.
Okay.
And I'm expecting to do it in less than 4 hours. So.
Excellent. Well, get stretch while we take a break. More after this on 720 WGN.